And we're wondering, as it is, David Minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation downtown the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is February 23rd, 2017, or Seder 27, 2020. It was third our first service today with a song entitled, When We Walk With the Yahweh. When we walk with the Yah in the flight of His word, what a glory He sheds on our way. Let us do His good will. He abides with us still, and with all we'll trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey. Not a burden we bear, not a sorrow we share, for a toll He doth quickly repay. Not a grief or a loss, not a frown nor a cross, but is blessed if we trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey. But we never can prove the delights of His love until on the altar we lay. For the favor He shows and the joy He bestows are for them who will trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey. And in fellowship sweet, we shall sit at His feet, and we'll walk by His side in the way. We will go where He's headed, we'll go. Never fear, only trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yahshua but to trust and obey.
Part 18, Captivity and Restoration. We're in Prophets and Kings, chapter 41. We're on page 503, and the title of our service today is The Fiery Furnace. For the dream of the great image opening before the Nebuchadnezzar events reaching unto the close of the time had been given that he might understand the part he was to act in the world's history and the relation of his kingdom should sustain unto the kingdom of heaven. In the interpretation of the dream, he had been plainly instructed regarding the establishment of the Elohim's everlasting kingdom. In the days of these kings, Daniel had declared, shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people. But it shall break in peace and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure, Daniel 2:44 and 45. For the king had acknowledged the power of the Yahweh, saying unto the Daniel, of a truth it is, that your Elohim is the Elohim of gods and a revealer of secrets. Verse 47. For a time afterwards, Nebuchadnezzar was influenced by the fear of the Yahweh. But his heart was not yet cleansed from the worldly ambitions and a desire for the self-exaltation. for the prosperity attending his reign filled him with the pride. In the time, he ceased to honor Yahweh and resumed his idol worship with the increased zeal and bigotry. For the words, "Thou art this head of gold," had made a deep impression upon the ruler's mind. Verse 38, "For the wise men of his realm, taking advantage of this and of his return unto the idolatry, proposed that he make an image similar unto the one seen in his dream, and set it up where all might behold the head of the gold, which had been interpreted as representing his kingdom. Pleased with the flattering suggestion, he determined to carry it out and to go even farther. Instead of reproducing the image as he had seen it, he would excel the original. His image should not deteriorate in value from the head into the feet, but should be entirely of the gold, symbolic throughout of Babylon, as an eternal, indestructible, all-powerful kingdom, which should break in pieces all other kingdoms and stand forever. Well, the thought of the establishing of the empire and a dynasty that should endure forever appealed very strongly unto the mighty ruler before whose arms the nations of the earth had been unable to stand. With an enthusiasm born of the boundless ambition and selfish pride, he entered into the council with his wise men as to how to bring this about, forgetting the remarkable providences connected with the dream of the great image, forgetting also that the Yahweh of Israel, through his servant Daniel, had made plain the significance of the image, and that in the connection with this interpretation, the great men of the realm had been saved an ignominious death, forgetting all except their desire to establish their own power and supremacy. The king and his counselors of the state determined that by every means possible they would endeavor to exalt Babylon as supreme and worthy of the universal allegiance. For the symbolic representation by which Yahweh had revealed unto the king and people his purpose for the nations of the earth was now to be made to serve for the glorification of the human power. Daniel's interpretation was to be rejected and forgotten. Truth was to be misinterpreted and misapplied, for the simple design of the heaven for the unfolding unto the minds of the men and important events of the future was to be used to hinder the spread of the knowledge that Elohim desired the world to receive. Thus, through the devices of the ambitious men, Satan was seeking to thwart the divine purpose for the human race. The enemy of the mankind knew that the truth, unmixed with the error, is a power mighty to save, but that when used to exalt self and to further the projects of the men, it becomes a power for evil. From his rich store, the treasure Nebuchadnezzar caused to be made a great golden image. Similar in its general features unto that which had been seen in the vision, save in the one particular of the material of which it was composed. Accustomed as they were unto the magnificent representations of their heathen deity, for the Chaldeans had never before produced anything so imposing and majestic as this resplendent statue, 60 cubits in the height and 6 cubits in the breadth, and it is not surprising that in a land where idol worship was of the universal prevalence, the beautiful and the priceless image on the plain of the Dura representing the glory of the Babylon in its magnificence and power should be consecrated as an object of worship. This was accordingly provided for, and a decree went forth that on the day of the dedication all should show their supreme loyalty unto the Babylonian power by the bowing before the image. For the appointed day came, and a vast concourse from all the people, nations, and languages assembled on the plain of the Dura, and the humming at the king's command, when the sound of the music was heard, the whole company fell down and worshipped the golden image. On that eventful day, the powers of darkness seemed to be gaining a signal triumph. The worship of the golden image bade fair to become connected permanently with the established forms of the idolatry recognized as the state religion of the land. Satan hoped thereby to defeat Elohim's purpose of making the presence of the captive Israel in the Babylon a means of a blessing unto all the nations of the heathendom. But Elohim decreed otherwise. Not all have bowed the knee unto the idolatrous symbol of the human power. In the midst of the worshiping multitude, here were three men who were firmly resolved not thus to dishonor the Elohim of heaven. Their Elohim was King of Kings, the Sovereign of Sovereigns. Okay, their Savior. It's got, it just says their God was King of Kings. Their Savior, Yahshua, was and is the King of Kings and the Sovereign of Sovereigns. They would bow unto none other. That is true, because when they were told to bow down for that image, Nebuchadnezzar commanded the three Hebrew worthies to bow down for that image. When they refused, what happened? They were thrown into the fiery furnace, and then there appeared a fourth one walking in the midst of the fire with them. And that fourth one, Nebuchadnezzar identified him as being the son of Yahweh, Yahshua. So that's the one that the Hebrew worthy of placing their faith in. The son of Yahweh, the one that had the power to deliver here on earth, that was made King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns here on earth. So that's the one that they were acquainted with. For under Nebuchadnezzar, flesh with the triumph was brought the word that among his subjects there were some who dared disobey his mandate. Certain of the wise men, jealous of the honors that had been bestowed upon the faithful companions of Daniel, now reported unto the king their flagrant violation of his wishes. O king, live forever, they exclaimed. There are certain Jews of whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. For the king commanded the men be brought before him. Is it true? He inquired. Do not ye serve my God, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? He endeavored by threats to induce them to unite with the multitude. Pointing unto the fiery furnace, he reminded them of the punishment awaiting them if they should persist in their refusal to obey his will. But firmly the Hebrews testified unto their allegiance of the Elohim of heaven and their faith in his power to deliver. The act of bowing to the image was understood by all to be an act of worship. Such homage they could render unto Elohim alone. As the three Hebrews stood before the king, he was convinced that they possessed something the other wise men of his kingdom did not have. They had been faithful in the performance of every duty. He would give them another trial, if only they would signify their willingness to unite with the multitude in the worshiping of the image. All would be well with them, but if you worship not, he added, you shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fire furnace. Then, with his hand stretched upward, and the defiance he demanded, who is that God that shall deliver you out of my house? In vain were the king's threats. He could not turn the men from their allegiance unto the ruler of the universe. For the ruler of the universe. From the history of their fathers, they had learned that the disobedience unto Elohim results in dishonor, disaster, and death, and that the fear of the Yahweh is beginning of wisdom, the foundation of all true prosperity. Calmly facing the furnace, they said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, if this is your decision, our Elohim whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. For their faith strengthened as they declared that Yahweh would be glorified by delivering them, and with triumphant assurance born of implicit trust in the Yahweh, they added, but if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. The king's wrath knew no bound. Full of the fury, the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Representatives of a despised and captive race directed let the furnace be heated 7 times better than it wont. He commanded the mighty men of his army to bind the worshipers of the Israel's God, Yahweh, preparatory to the summary execution. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fire furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the Yahweh did not forget his own, as his witnesses were cast into the furnace. The Savior revealed himself unto them in the person, and together they walked in the midst of the fire, in the presence of the Yahweh, of the heat and cold, the flames lost their power to consume. From his royal seat, the king looked on, expecting to see the men who had defied him utterly destroyed, but his feelings of triumph suddenly changed. The noble standing nearest saw his face grow pale as he started from the throne and looked intently into the glowing flame. In alarm, the king, turning unto his lords, asked, "Did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? No, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire. And he had no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the son of Yahweh." How did that heathen king know what the son of Yahweh was like? For the Hebrew captives filling positions of trust in the Babylon had in life and character represented before him the truth. When asked for a reason of their faith, they had given it without hesitation. Plainly and simply, they had presented the principles of the righteousness, thus teaching those around them of the Elohim whom they worshipped. They had told of Yahshua, the Redeemer, to come, and in the form of the fourth in the midst of the fire, the king recognized the son of Elohim. I know his own greatness and dignity forgotten. Nebuchadnezzar descended from his throne and, going unto the mouth of the furnace, cried out, "You servants of the Most High, Elohim, come forth and come hither." And then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth before the vast multitude, showing themselves unhurt. For the presence of their Savior had guarded them from harm. Only their fetters had been burned. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was the hair of their heads singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Forgotten was the great golden image set up with such pomp. In the presence of the living Elohim, men feared and trembled. Blessed be the Yahweh of the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The humble king was constrained to acknowledge, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, and that they might not serve nor worship any deity, any god except their own Yahweh. For the experiences of that day led Nebuchadnezzar to issue a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the deity, the Yahweh of the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, shall be cut in pieces. And their houses shall be made a dunghill. There is no other Yahweh, he urged, as a reason for the decree that can deliver after this sort. In these and like the words, the king of the Babylon endeavored to spread abroad before all the peoples of the earth his conviction that the power and authority of the Elohim of the heathen of the Hebrew was worthy of supreme adoration, and Yahweh was pleased with the effort of the king to show him reverence and to make the royal confession of the allegiance as widespread as was the Babylonian realm. It was right for the king to make public confession and to seek to exalt the Elohim of heaven above all other gods, but in endeavoring to force his subjects to make a similar confession of the faith, and to show similar reverence Nebuchadnezzar was exceeding his right as a temporal sovereign. He had no more right, either civil or moral, to threaten men with death for not worshiping Yahweh. Then he had to make the decree consigning unto the flames all who refused to worship the golden image. Elohim never compels the obedience of man. He leaves all free to choose whom they will serve. By the deliverance of his faithful servants, the Yahweh declared that he takes his stand with the oppressed and rebukes all earthly powers that rebel against the authority of the heaven. For the three Hebrews declared unto the whole nation of the Babylon their faith in him whom they worship. They relied on the Yahweh, and the hour of their trial they remembered the promise. When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the rivers they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. Isaiah 43:2. And in a marvelous manner their faith in the living word had been honored in the sight of all. The tidings of their wonderful deliverance were carried unto many countries by the representatives of the different nations that had been invited by the Nebuchadnezzar unto the dedication through the faithfulness of his children. Yahweh was glorified in all the earth. Important are the lessons to be learned from the experiences of the Hebrew youth. On the plain of Dura, in this our day, many of Elohim's servants, though innocent of the wrongdoing, will be given over to suffer humiliation and abuse at the hands of those who, inspired by the Satan, are filled with the envy and religious bigotry, especially with the wrath of the men he aroused against those who hallow the Sabbath of the fourth commandment, and at last a universal decree will denounce these as a deserving of death. The season of the distress before Elohim's people will call for a faith that will not falter. His children must make it manifest that he is the only object of their worship, that no consideration, not even that of the life itself, can induce them to make the least confession unto false worship. And to the loyal heart, the commands of the sinful finite men will sink into the insignificance beside the word of the eternal Yahweh. Truth will be obeyed, though the result be imprisonment or exile or death. And in the days of the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, so in the closing period of the earth's history, Yahweh will work mightily in behalf of those who stand steadfastly for the right. He who walketh the Hebrew worthy in the fiery furnace will be with his followers wherever they are. His abiding presence will comfort and sustain in the midst of the time of trouble. Trouble such as has not been since there was a nation. His chosen ones will stand unmoved. Satan, with all the hosts of the evil, cannot destroy the weakness of Yahweh's saints. Angels that excel in strength will protect them, and in their behalf Yahweh will reveal himself as a King of kings and Savior of saviors and Sovereign of sovereigns, and it says God of gods here. So I added all of that extra. Able to save unto the uttermost those who have put their trust in him. End of chapter 41, chapter 42, True Greatness. Okay, true greatness, exalted unto the pinnacle of the worldly honor, and acknowledged even by the inspiration as a King of kings, Ezekiel 26:7. Nebuchadnezzar, nevertheless, at times had ascribed unto the favor of the Yahweh the glory of his kingdom and the splendor of his reign. Such had been the case after his dream of the great image. His mind had been profoundly influenced by this vision and by the thought that the Babylonian Empire, universal thought it was finally to fall, and other kingdoms were to bear sway until at last all earthly powers were to be superseded by a kingdom set up by the Elohim of heaven, which kingdom was never to be destroyed. Nebuchadnezzar's noble conception of the Elohim's purpose concerning the nations was lost sight of later in the experience. Yet when his proud spirit was humbled before the multitude of the plain of Dura, he once more had acknowledged that Elohim's kingdom is an everlasting kingdom and his dominion is from generation to generation. An idolater by the birth, training, and at the head of an idolatrous people, he had nevertheless an innate sense of the justice and right. And Elohim was able to use him as an instrument for the punishment of the rebellious and for the fulfillment of the divine purpose. For the trouble of the nations, Ezekiel 28:7, it was given Nebuchadnezzar after the years of the patient and wearying labor to conquer Tyre, Egypt also fell a prey unto his victorious armies. And as he added nation after nation unto the Babylonian realm, he added more and more unto his fame as the greatest ruler of the age. It is not surprising that the successful monarch, so ambitious and so proud-spirited, should be tempted for the turning aside from the path of humility, which alone leads unto to true greatness. In the intervals between his wars of the conquest, he gave much thought unto the strengthening and beautifying of his capital, until at length the city of the Babylon became the chief glory of his kingdom, the golden city, the praise of the whole earth. His passion as a builder and his signal success in the making Babylon one of the wonders of the world ministered unto his pride until he was in the grave danger of spoiling his record as a wise ruler, whom the Elohim could continue to use as an instrument for the carrying out of the divine purpose. In the mercy, Yahweh gave the king another dream to warn him of his peril and of the snare that had been laid for his ruin. In a vision of the night, Nebuchadnezzar saw a great tree growing in the midst of the earth, his top towering unto the heavens, and his branches stretching unto the ends of the earth. Flocks and herds from the mountains and hills enjoyed shelter beneath his shadow, and the birds of the air built their nest in its boughs. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, and all flesh was fed of it. As the king gazed upon the lofty tree, he beheld a watcher, even an holy one, who approached the tree and in a loud voice cried, "Hew down the tree and cut off its branches, shake off its leaves and scatter his fruit. Let the beast get away from under it and the fowls from his branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with the band of iron and brass and the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast in the earth, grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the Yahweh, of the Most High." Okay, the man, let's do that again. He says, "This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the Holy Ones, for the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it unto whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basis of men." Greatly troubled by the dream, which was evidently a prediction of the adversity, the king repeated it unto the magician, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. But although the dream was very explicit, none of the wise men could interpret it. Once more in this idolatrous nation, testimony was reborn of the fact that only those who love and fear Yahweh can understand the mysteries of the kingdom of the heaven. The king in his perplexity sent for his servant Daniel, a man esteemed for his integrity and constancy and for his unrivaled wisdom.
When Daniel, in response to the royal summons, stood in the king's presence, Nebuchadnezzar said, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy Yahweh is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretation thereof. After relating the dream, Nebuchadnezzar said, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof, for as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, that thou art able, for the spirit of holy gods is in thee. Unto Daniel the meaning of the dream was plain, and its significance startled him. He was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. Seeing Daniel's hesitation and distress, the king expressed sympathy for his servant. Belshazzar, he said, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. My master, Daniel answered, the dream be unto them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof unto thine enemies. For the prophet realized that upon him Elohim had laid the solemn duty of the revealing unto Nebuchadnezzar the judgment that was about to fall upon him because of his pride and arrogance. Daniel must interpret the dream in the language the king could understand, and although its dreadful import had made him hesitate in the dumb amazement, yet he must state the truth, whatever the consequences unto himself. Then Daniel made known the mandate of the Almighty, the tree that thou sawest, he said, which grew and was strong, whose mighty his height reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof unto all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwell, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation. It is thou, O king, that art grown and become strong. Thy greatness is grown and reaches unto heaven, and thy dominion unto the end of the earth. Whereas the king saw a watcher and the Holy One coming down from heaven and saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast of the field, till 7 times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my master the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee, till thou knoweth the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Having faithfully interpreted the dream, Daniel urged the proud monarch to repent and turn unto Yahweh, that by the right then he might avert the threatened calamity. O king, the prophet pleaded, let thy counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy unto the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. For a time the impression of the warning and the counsel of the prophet was strong upon Nebuchadnezzar, but the heart that is not transformed by the grace of Yahweh soon loses the impressions of the Holy Spirit. Self-indulgence and ambition had not yet been eradicated from the king's heart, and later on these traits reappeared. Notwithstanding the instructions so graciously given him and the warnings of the past experience, Nebuchadnezzar again allowed himself to be controlled by a spirit of jealousy against the kingdoms that were to follow his rule, which heretofore had been to a great degree just and merciful, became oppressive, hardened his heart. He used his they'll be given talent for their self-glorification, exalting himself above the Elohim who had given him life and power. Well, Master General, the Yahweh lingered, but instead of being led to repentance by his forbearance, the king indulged his pride until he lost confidence in the interpretation of the dream and jested at his former years. A year from the time he had received the warning, Nebuchadnezzar, walking in his palace and thinking with pride of his power as a ruler and of his success as a builder, exclaimed, "Is that not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" While the proud boast is yet on the king's lips, a voice from heaven announced that Elohim appointed time of judgment had come. Upon his ears fell the mandate of the Yahweh, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, unto thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou knowest the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will." In a moment the reason that Elohim had given him was taken away. The judgment that the king thought perfect, the wisdom on which he prided himself, was removed, and the once mighty ruler was a maniac. His hand could no longer sway the scepter. The messages of the warning had been unheeded. Now, stripped of the power his creator had given him and driven from men, Nebuchadnezzar did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hairs were grown like eagles, feathers, and his nails like the bird's claws. For the 7 years, Nebuchadnezzar was an astonishment to all his subjects. For 7 years, he was humble before all the world. Then his reason was restored, and looking up in humility unto the Yahweh of heaven, he recognized the divine hand in his chastisement. In a public proclamation, he acknowledged his guilt and the great mercy of Yahweh and his restoration. At the end of the day, he said, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, lift up my eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I bless the Most High. And I praise and honor him that liveth forever. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he doeth according unto his will, and the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Once proud monarch had become an humble child of Yahweh, a tyrannical, overbearing ruler, a wise and compassionate king, he who had defied and blasphemed the Elohim of heaven, now acknowledged the power of the Most High and earnestly sought to promote the fear of the Yahweh and the happiness of his subject. Under the rebuke of him who is King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns, Nebuchadnezzar had learned at last the lesson which all rulers need to learn, that true greatness consists in true righteousness. He acknowledged Yahweh as the living Elohim, saying, I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven, all whose works are true, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to obey. For the Yahweh's purpose that the greatest kingdom in the world should show forth his praise was now fulfilled. For this public proclamation in which Nebuchadnezzar had acknowledged the mercy and goodness and authority of Yahweh was the last act of his life recorded in the sacred history. For the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines might drink therein, the king would prove that nothing was too sacred for his hands to handle. They brought the golden vessels, and the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of the gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. Little did Belshazzar think that there was a heavenly witness under his idolatrous revelry, that a divine watcher, unrecognized, looked upon the scene of the profanation, heard the sacrilegious mirth, beheld the idolatry, but soon the uninvited guest made his presence felt. When the revelry was at its height, a bloodless hand came forth and traced upon the walls of the palace characters that gleamed like the fire words, which, though unknown unto the vast throng, were a portent of doom unto the now conscience-stricken king and his guests. Hushed was the boisterous mirth, while men and women, seized with the nameless terror, watched the hand slowly tracing the mysterious characters before them passed, as in the panoramic view, the deeds of their evil lives. They seemed to be a sign before the judgment board of the eternal Yahweh, whose power they had justified. Were but a few moments before he had been hilarity and blasphemous witticism, were pallid faces and cries of fear. The Elohim makes men fear, they cannot hide the intensity of their terror. Belshazzar was the most terrified of them all. He it was who, above all others, had been responsible for the rebellion against Yahweh, which that night had reached its height in the Babylonian realm. In the presence of the unseen watcher, the representative of him whose power had been challenged and whose name had been blasphemed, the king was paralyzed with the fear. Conscience was awakened. The joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. Belshazzar had impiously lifted himself up against the Elohim of heaven, and had trusted in his own might, not supposing that any would dare say, why doest thou thus? But now he realized that he must render an account of the stewardship entrusted him, and that for his wasted opportunities and his defiant attitude, he could offer no excuse. In vain the king tried to read the burning letters, but here was a secret he could not fathom, a power he could neither understand nor gainsay. In the despair he turned unto the wise men of his realm for help. His wild cry rang out in the assembly, calling upon the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers to read the writing. Whosoever shall read this writing, he promised, and show me the interpretation thereof, shall be clothed with a scarlet, and have a chain of gold about his neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. But of no avail was his appeal unto his trusted advisor. With the offers of the rich rewards, heavenly wisdom cannot be brought or sold. All the king's wise men could not read their writings, nor make known unto the king the interpretation of. They were no more able to read the mysterious characters than had been the wise men of a former generation to interpret the dreams of the Nebuchadnezzar and the queen mother remembered Daniel, who over half a century before had made known unto the king Nebuchadnezzar the dream of the great image and its interpretation. O king, live forever, she said. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom in whom the spirit of the holy gods and in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods is found in him, of whom the king Nebuchadnezzar made master, of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Forasmuch as an extra spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of the dreams and showing of the hard sentences, and dissolving of the doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belshazzar, now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. Then was Daniel brought in before the king, making an effort to regain his composure. Belshazzar said unto the prophet, Art thou that Daniel, which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king of my fathers brought out of Jewry? I have even heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing, and make known unto me the interpretation of it. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing, and I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing, and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. Before that terror-stricken throng, Daniel, unmoved by the promises of the king, stood in the quiet dignity of a servant of the Most High, not to speak words of flattery, but to interpret a message of the doom. If thou gifts be to thyself, he said, give thy rewards to another, yet I will read the writings unto the king, and make known unto him the interpretation. The prophet first reminded Belshazzar of the matters with which he was familiar, but which had not taught him the lesson of humility that might have saved him. He spoke of Nebuchadnezzar's sin and fall, and of the Yahweh dealing with him, the dominion and glory bestowed upon him, the divine judgment for his pride, and his subsequent acknowledgement of the power and mercy of the Yahweh of Israel. And then in bold and emphatic words he rebuked Belshazzar for his great wickedness. He held the king's sin up before him, showing him the lessons he might have learned, but did not. Belshazzar had not read aright the experience of his grandfather, nor heeded the warning of the events so significant unto himself, for the opportunity of the knowing and obeying the true Elohim had been given him, but had not been taken to heart, and he was about to reap the consequence of his rebellion. Thou, Belshazzar, the prophet declared, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Yahweh of the heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of the silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which are not, nor hear, nor know, and the Elohim in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was a part of the hand sent from him, and his writing was written. Turning unto the heaven-sent message, on the wall the prophet read, many, many tekel upharsin. The hand that had traced the characters was so no longer visible, but these four words were still gleaming forth with the terrible distinctiveness. Okay, it says, and now, with bated breath, the people listened while the aged prophet declared, this is the interpretation of the thing, many, Yahweh hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, Thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Now this is meeting its fulfillment right now. This has just met its fulfillment. The Medes and the Persians have just taken over Washington D.C. today. Donald Trump and Mike Pence. And this is a decree upon Obama. He's been weighing the balances and found one. He had 8 years to make good. And he proved exactly what his intents were. And so he fulfilled those right to the letter. He robbed the treasury. He put this country in great, great debt. Let us continue. And the last night of the mad folly, Belshazzar and his lords had filled up the measure of their guilt and the guilt of the Chaldean kingdom. No longer could Elohim's restraining hand ward off the impending evil. Through the manifold providences, Elohim has sought to teach them reverence for his law. He would have healed Babylon, he declared, of those whose judgment was now reaching unto heaven. But she is not healed, Jeremiah 51:9. Because of the strange perversity of the human heart, Elohim had at last found it necessary to pass the irrevocable sentence. Belshazzar was to fall, and his kingdom was to pass into other hands. As the prophet ceased speaking, the kingdom commanded that he be awarded the promised honors. And in the harmony with this, they clothed Daniel with the scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Okay, so what does that translate today? Donald Trump and Mike Pence are the number one and two rulers today in the kingdom. Well, who is the third ruler then? Who takes Daniel's place? It would be the prophet. So, this kingdom that I represent, the kingdom of David here, it represents the prophet's position of being the third in the ruler, and the ruler of the kingdom of heaven. Here on earth. Yahweh's everlasting kingdom is set up as a number three, but it's an invisible kingdom. An authority, that is. More than a century before, inspiration had foretold that the night of the pleasure, during which king and counselors would vie with one another in the blaspheme against Yahweh, would suddenly be changed into a season of fear and destruction. And now, in the rapid succession of momentous events, followed one another exactly as it had been portrayed in the prophet's scriptures. Years before, the principles and the drama had been born, while still in the festal hall, surrounded by those whose doom had been sealed. The king is informed by a messenger that his city is taken by the enemy against whose devices he had felt so secure, that the passages are stopped, that the men of war are fighting, verse 31-32. Even while he and his nobles were drinking from the sacred vessels of the Yahweh and praising their gods of silver and of gold, the Medes and the Persians, having turned the Euphrates out of its channel, were marching into the heart of the unguarded city. For the army of the Cyrus now stood under the walls of the palace. The city was filled with the soldiers of the enemy, as with the caterpillars, verse 14, and the triumph shouts could be heard above the despairing cries of the astonished revelers. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and an alien monarch set up on the throne. Clearly had the Hebrew prophet spoken concerning the manner in which the Babylon would fall. Now I just read you the decree that stands for type and antitype. This happened to Belshazzar, literally. History's recorded it. It's a fact now. Obama is the antitypical Belshazzar, so he has a day of reckoning yet coming. As in the vision, Elohim had revealed unto them the events of the future. He had explained, how is Shadrach taken, and how is the praise of the whole earth surprised? How is Babylon become an astonishment among the nations? How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? How is Babylon become a desolation among the nations? At the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved, and the cry is heard among the nations. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. The spoiler is come upon her, even upon Babylon, and her mighty men are taken. Every one of their bows is broken, for the Yahweh Elohim of the recompenses shall surely requite. And I will make drunk her princes and her wise men, her captains and her rulers and her mighty men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake, save the king, whose name is the Yahshua of the host. This is the Son. I have laid a snare for thee, and thou art also taken, O Babylon. And thou wast not aware, thou art found, and also caught, because thou hast striven against Yahweh. Yahweh hath opened his army, and hath brought forth the weapons of his indignation, for this is the work of the Yahweh Elohim of the host in the land of the Chaldeans. Thus saith Yahweh the host, the children of the Israel and the children of Judah were oppressed together, and all that took them captives held them fast. They refused to let them go. Their Redeemer is strong. The Yahshua the host is his name. He shall thoroughly plead their cause, that he may give rest unto the land and disquiet the inhabitants of Babylon. Jeremiah 51:41, 51:8, 52:23, 46, 51:8, 56, and verse 57, chapter 50, verse 24, verse 25, 33 and 34. Thus the broad walls of the Babylon became utterly broken, and her high places,
her high gates
burned with the fire. Thus did the Yahweh of the host cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and lay low the hardness of the terrible. Thus did Babylon, the glory of the kingdom, the beauty of the Chaldees, excellency, become a Sodom and Gomorrah, a place forever accursed. It shall never be inhabited. Inspiration has declared. Neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch a tent there. Neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. But wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls that dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there, and the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces. I will also make it a possession for the bittern and the pools of the water, and I will feed it with the beasts of the destruction, saith the Yahshua of the host. Jeremiah 51:58, Isaiah 13:11, verse 19 and 22, and Isaiah 14:23. Unto the last ruler of Babylon, as in the type to his first, there's your type, and Obama, he's the last ruler in Babylon today. He's the last ruler in spiritual Babylon, the Antitype, had come to the sentence of the Divine Watcher. O King, unto thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. Daniel 4:31. There you have it. There's your prophecies of what has just taken place with Washington, D.C. Okay, this brings the end of our study. This hour, you can contact us at the 11th hour call. And at number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Lead Me to the Rock by the Elijah Davis, song that I've written.
Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine, and I'll forever be. And tell it to the sun and of everyone who came to sit and see. For the life in this world I have to live is but a stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain is never found alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's higher than I. lead me to the place of the sacred street, lead me to the scratches in the sky. A man on a mission came to this world, sort of on the slum. On a major station, a stranger quickly seen passing by. For the moon shone bright, but the heavenly light set for the starry home. For the brightest one of them all is the one that marches home. Lead me to the rock that's higher than God. Lead me to the fountain that everyone's got. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to those matches in the sky. Don't leave me. Descended out of the one breathed from the heaven's rip. As the time rolled on, many stories are told about the man of the Galilee. I changed the water into the wine, made the blind to see. Lead me to the rock that is higher than night. Lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to those matches in the sky. Lead me to those mansions in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mansions in the sky.